the Q, the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Merrick and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Welcome once again to Junior, your CHL podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino, who vows to be here for the entire program today, so much so that he's actually traveled from his home to our downtown Toronto studios at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sam, how are you today, sir?
Yeah, doing great. Nice to be here. Nice to have good quality sound.
Yeah, we're getting that fixed up right away. Thank you very much. So you can enjoy your weekly podcast here at Sportsnet.ca or at iTunes. A lot of news and notes to get to. A lot of great guests to get to as well. Sam, Troy Smith, head coach of the Kitchener Rangers, will join us. You can see his Rangers Friday in action on Friday Night Hockey against the Sarnia Sting. Yannick Jean will drop by, the Chicoutimi GM and head coach. Speaking of Chicoutimi, our CHL Alumni Player of the Week will be Felix Potvin. Some look back at his time with Junior. And also, Brad Robson will drop by, and we'll get to him in a couple of moments. Now, the former general manager of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, because it has been a very interesting 24, if not 48 hours for that Western Hockey League franchise. Brad Robson fired today. Yesterday, Drake Berehowski relieved of his head coaching duties of the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Sam, have you been able to make sense of all this?
Not really. And it's been a challenge for me in that you allow your general manager to make a coaching change and then you get rid of your general manager. And obviously everything has to go through the board in Lethbridge. So yep. You have to wonder what they were thinking to kind of allow this all to take place. Now, when I look at teams that are run by cities across the Canadian Hockey League, it really doesn't work save for Kitchener. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Peterborough is the other one that I can think of in the Ontario Hockey League. Things are starting to go sideways there. It's just too much to have to deal with. I mean, everyone has their opinion on the game. We're all Canadian. We all have our opinions. And when you have to deal, in the case of Lethbridge, I think there was maybe 14 or 15 people you have to deal with in the board. I'm not sure how many there are in Peterborough. But every decision you make, every move you make, when it has to go through that many people, I just don't see how it can work. I don't see how you can expedite things properly. And in the case of Lethbridge, you look at Brad Robson was backed into making a couple of deals where he probably didn't get full value back. And my guess is, and this is just my opinion here, that player says, yeah, I want to move. I want to be traded. It has to go to the board. Okay, well, here's the situation. And then you have to call your general managers, and then you have to go back to the board and say, I've talked to all of these people about this situation, and now the word's out, and you don't, you know, it just doesn't work. So, you know, in terms of Lethbridge, we've heard so much about an ownership change there, Chris Versteeg and his group, whatever the case may be. Private ownership, I think, is still the best answer there. But, man, this is a pretty big hole that the Hurricanes are in right now.
You know, you mentioned the Peterborough Pizza a couple of seconds ago, and a couple of years ago, there were a couple, well, at least one, maybe as many as two, private groups looking to acquire the Peterborough Pizza. That didn't come to any fruition. But can you see a different scenario in Lethbridge? You mentioned Christopher Steeg's group. He's been passionate for a number of years about reclaiming the old franchise that he used to play for. And you think that comes to fruition anytime, Sam?
I
do. Or just stay the way it is?
No, I do. And I think Peterborough is in a different situation because you look at the barn, it was renovated there to the tone of 10 or 12 million bucks, and it's still probably not suitable to host a Canadian Hockey League team. It is better, and it is a nice place to watch a game, but it's not quite suitable on the business side. When I look at Lethbridge and all the renovations that have gone on there at the NMAX arena, I mean, holy, to think of what's gone on over there, it's a perfect building if you're an owner to go in there and to work out a lease agreement with the city and, you know, with there'd be some extra revenues there, you know, parking and, you know, if you can sell some jerseys, if the team starts winning again, it's a potential gold mine. I mean, that's always the case when you talk about new ownership, relocation, whatever the case may be. Are you going to be able to go into a barn that's suitable? And there's no question, Lethbridge, the barn is way more than suitable. It's awesome in there right now. It's an unbelievable place to play and to watch. And, you know, the dressing room set up for the home team is just, it's amazing over there. So that part's taken care of. And that's why I think maybe it's, you know, change is on the horizon when it comes to the ownership there.
The other piece of this story we should mention as well, and all these announcements made by Hurricanes Board President Doug Paisley today and Drake Berhowski yesterday. Peter Anholt, Assistant General Manager of the Hurricanes, will now take over two assignments, two portfolios, GM and head coach of the hockey club. So they go to the former Kelowna Rockets head coach to run the Hurricanes, Sam.
Yeah, and he's done it. I mean, in Seattle, he's done it in Red Deer. He's done it in Prince Albert most recently, back to the 06-07 season, and he hasn't had a ton of success as a head coach, but I think he's learned along the way. He's a guy who knows the league. He knows not just the players in the league from having been an assistant coach here, but he also is very familiar with most of the management. And I think turning that job over to one person is probably a little easier because it just eliminates one step. I mean, if you're Drake Berhowski, you have wishes. You go to Brad Robinson and kind of give him your wish list, then Brad has to go to the board, and then the board has to approve, so on and so forth. You're just eliminating one of the steps in the chain here. And so I don't think that can be anything but helpful. But when it comes to Anholt, I'll be interested to see how he's able to make out here in what is a very challenging situation.
So a number of coaching and a couple of GM. Well, a number of coaching moves specifically in the Western Hockey League, but elsewhere, I mean, the Ontario Hockey League, the Q, of course, and we'll talk to Yannick Jean here in a couple of moments, but the Western Hockey League sort of leading the way by replacing bench bosses.
Yep, three guys so far. And, you look at Prince Albert's situation and what's gone on there. I mean, it's a club that has its challenges, and, they were lucky to get Josh Morrissey back from the Winnipeg Jets. They didn't get Leon Draisaitl back, and that really puts a wrench in the plans because if you get him back, you can do one of two things. You can go out and mortgage a little bit of the future and make a run, or you can get rid of Draisaitl knowing that this is probably his last year, and then from there go ahead and move him for pieces that'll help you in the future. So the Western Hockey League is it's not been kind to this point. And when we started the year, there were I think 10 out of the 22 markets had a coach in a different place than they were previously. Yep. Troy Ward being the other guy who's been let go out of Vancouver with Claude Noel, who was our guest last week, moving into that position. So it's not been a fun place to be a head coach over the last year and a half, that's for sure.
Yeah, from coaching changes to franchise changes, we'll fast forward here, Sam, to the Ontario Hockey League and speculation now coming out of Plymouth. And these come right from the owner's mouth himself, Peter Karmanos. Plymouth could be on their way to Chatham as early as next season. Attendance has been an issue there. They've been a playoff team for 23 of their 25 seasons, I want to say, but it just hasn't been able to take hold there yet. What do you hear? What do you know about Plymouth to Chatham? And the other sidebar to that is, would this be a sale for Karmanos, or would he still retain some type of ownership? Because I've heard two different stories.
Well, I heard John Shannon on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. There's a little plug. Talking about Karmanos wanting to get out of Carolina. So
yes,
it wouldn't surprise me if he wanted out of the hockey business altogether. I mean, you look at the CompuWare Arena, who was able to sell that to the U.S. Development Program. And so while it would probably still work there for another year, I think all the regular places in Ontario that you hear of getting a team will be mentioned. So Chatham, obviously, Karmanos mentions that, and I think that is a bit of a play to maybe open the door to some other cities. Mm-hmm. Brantford, you always hear Hamilton, Chatham, all the regular places will be involved there. But I would say Karmanos wants out of the hockey business altogether. I would say Chatham has got equally as good a chance as maybe anywhere else. But the thing to take note of here, the application for relocation is December 31st. Most people are A, into the sauce for New Year's, B, are watching watching the U.S.-Canada game. And so this one might slip under their radar.
Okay.
This decision or this movement or this application might slip under the radar. So I just advise you to stay out of the sauce for a little while longer. And maybe during the intermission of the Canada-U.S. game, to kind of pay attention as to what might go on here.
Here's our podcast pledge to you, gentle listener. Sam and I will be sober on that day. How about that? That's our pledge to you.
Yeah, I'm glad you made it.
From the okay, one of the two of us will be. A good thing or bad thing for the OHL if Plymouth goes to Canada, goes to Chatham. Ryan Pyatt at London Free Press maintaining today in his piece, it's a really bad thing for the OHL, since Plymouth is a venue where U.S. kids can go and sort of look at the quality of competition and say, yeah, this is where I want to play.
Yeah, I mean, it was, there was probably nobody happier than all the Michigan universities and the U.S. development program, and Mike Vellucci took off to take his job with the Carolina Hurricanes because he did such a great job over the years of recruiting players to go and play there. And when you think about Ann Arbor and Plymouth, the proximity between those two towns might be 25 minutes to a half hour. And so if your kid was going to play at the University of Michigan or going to play in the development program, this became a very viable option. And now that option is not going to exist. So I agree with Ryan's assessment that it presents some challenges for the Ontario Hockey League. Now, the one thing in recent years that's kind of evened things out a little bit is that the fact that Windsor now has really become a good landing spot for some of the U.S.-born players, for some of the Michigan-born players, and it will remain that way with its proximity to Detroit. So, yes, the Ontario Hockey League will take a beat, but if it wasn't for the recent success of the Windsor Spitfires, I think that loss would be more heartfelt.
Any repercussions for a couple of other American teams, Erie and Saginaw?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Erie situation is, that's tenuous at best with what's happened in the Edmonton Oilers and how things have gone on there and what's going to happen with the American Hockey League in Hamilton. And I always felt that Erie was going to end up in Hamilton at some point, and I still think that that's going to happen. The process might be a little slower now. And when it comes to Saginaw, I think Saginaw has always kind of felt like the odd man out, if you will. And they do such a really good job over there at the Dow Event Center. And, it's the recent times, things haven't gone well in terms of being a hot playoff contender. Of course, the tragedy that you hate to even mention without shedding a tear with Terry Trafford there last year. And, the city's a little bit run down. I don't know. I mean, Saginaw, there's two ways to look at it. They could continue to kind of be the Lone Ranger there and be felt like a club that's been left out, or they can really accept this as a challenge to say, hey, now we can become that destination where Plymouth was an option before. It's no longer
now,
Saginaw.
Now it's just us.
Yeah, can become that destination. So, Craig Goslin and Greg Gilbert and Jim Palafito, the general manager there, I think they will take this on as a challenge and try and replace some of what will be left behind with Plymouth leaving.
Speaking of Saginaw, don't look now, but Vincent Trocheck is playing some dynamite hockey for the Florida Panthers in the NHL. He's been fantastic the last few weeks.
That Brandon Saad guy's turned out to be pretty good, too.
He's a little bit clutch for the Blackhawks, too. Sag somehow, despite all the challenges, have turned out some pretty high-class athletes. Speaking of high-class athletes, here's the update on Connor McDavid. Cast off yesterday. Practice without contact for a week, and then he'll start light contact afterwards. It looks like, and I talked to someone in his camp yesterday, it looks like Connor McDavid, Sam, is aiming to be in game shape, i.e. ready to play December 21st or 22nd. So Connor McDavid well on track to be part of the WJC or the U20, depending on what you call it.
Yeah, wouldn't want to push that date, not in the least. And when I talked to Scott Salmon at the presser back on December 1st, I know they mentioned December 21st as that target date. With yesterday's news, that hasn't changed whatsoever. For me, I'm just show up on the 26th, be ready to go. That would be that extra 5 days, I think, would be huge, because any team that you're going to play in pre-tournament competition knows exactly what they're up against, and why would you want to take that chance when you have the opportunity to rest it for another 5 days and maybe even more than that.
Speaking of the World Junior Squad, Anthony DeClaire, big news coming out of the Rangers camp earlier this week. The right winger will be loaned to Team Canada. Does that surprise you, Sam, even though he has been a scratch recently?
Yeah, he's been healthied a little bit, and I think the experience is going to be really good for him. I don't think this is the last we've heard from NHL teams. I really have to wonder what Dave Cameron is going to think about Curtis Lazar in Ottawa. Dave, having coached in the program before, knows what it means to the development of players, knows just how important Curtis Lazar would be to the program, and maybe not quite as much impacting his hockey club. So I'll be fascinated in that decision there, because ultimately, Ottawa has said it's going to come down to Curtis. He may be pushed or prodded by Dave one way or the other. There's obviously a good relationship with Hockey Canada and Dave Cameron. And so that one, to me, is going to be a fascinating one.
What about Jonathan Drouin? He got health bombed last night by Tampa. What about Drouin?
The same thing can be said about Steve Yzerman and his relationship with Hockey Canada, although some of those people have moved on. Yeah, exactly. I'm not so sure about that one. again, I think it would be a marvelous experience for Jonathan. I think he pressed so hard last year that at times he made him and rendered himself ineffective. Do you think he goes?
I don't. I don't think Drouin ends up going. I can see Lazar before I can see Jonathan Drouin for the reasons that you mentioned. And let's not forget, too, Tampa is still a top-level team in the Eastern Conference. And although Ottawa is only, a handful of points away from a playoff spot, it's already kind of feeling like the season is slipping away. And if you have a chance for one of your players to have a really positive experience, and Dave Cameron knows it's going away, why don't you just allow Curtis Lazar to take a little hiatus for a couple of weeks? I think Lazar over Drouin.
What about Horvat?
That's the wild card. Yeah. You see, and if you look at the bottom six for the Vancouver Canucks, much is always made about the Bonino line, the second line, the Sedin's line with Radim Verbata as well. But the job that the bottom six are doing, it's heard that third line with Lyndon Bay and Brad Richardson and Sean Mathias, although he's certainly dinged up now, have done a great job. The fourth liners have been getting it done too. And I know Bo Horvat isn't a guarantee to be in the lineup every single night, but a lot is still riding on that bottom six for Vancouver. They have depth, and Willie Desjardins isn't shy about skating his fourth line. Yeah. So
I knew Willie was going to love him.
Just a little jump ball, and it seems as if he does.
I think Lazar. For me, that's how I would say it would be the closest thing to a guarantee. I think Lazar ends up going, and I think that'll be it. I don't think Drouin, and I don't think Horvat.
Let's finish up our news segment. We're going to get to Brad Robson here now, former GM of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, in a couple of moments. Trades. Hey, the Quebec Ramparts getting better as we speak. Vladimir Kachev acquired last week. Jerome Verrier from Drummondville as well. So the Ramparts getting a little bit deeper up front. Does this portend to you that Anthony Duclair is for sure not coming back?
Ooh, boy. It'd be such... No, what it says to me is that Kamenev definitely is not coming. And that's why Kachev was able to take up that second import spot. So that's huge. But, you know, when you look at Moncton and the chemistry he had with Barbashev, I mean, this goes back to 2 years ago at the under-18s where they were so good last year. Even this year, they, you know, great chemistry there. So Kachev is a huge get for Quebec. You know, obviously adds depth to scoring there. And then he's a real solid guy, too. And he can put up some points. So that's going to be a couple of nice pieces for Phil Boucher to add. But I'm not so sure that it doesn't make the case that they feel strongly about Duclair coming back after the World Juniors and allowing him not only to have that experience, but to have the experience of playing in the MasterCard Memorial Cup, knowing that if he can do some of the things that he did this year in New York, that he might be able to start as a top nine guy with the Rangers as early as next year.
The only question, I suppose, becomes... what is the attitude if he does get sent back to Quebec? It's one thing to get sent back after training camp, one thing to get sent back after nine games, but when you're getting into Christmas, New Year's, and then you get sent back, you do wonder where the player's head is at.
No, and you're exactly right about that, and that's going to be a challenge. And, you know, Anthony hasn't always been the easiest to handle in that regard, but that's going to be the challenge of the coaching staff if indeed he does return. I think you know, if I look at it from the flip side, I'd say, okay, he's going to go and be basically with his World Junior teammates for a month now because he's been released to go to the camp. Maybe he kind of gets used to being in that mode. Let's not forget he's cashed a couple of months of National Hockey League paychecks. That always helps to ease the pain a little bit, you know. He could take the boys out for dinner and whatnot. But, you know, that will help a little bit for sure. And maybe getting back with some of his teammates for a month, and you know, maybe that situation that helps ease the pain, if you will, of going back from Manhattan to Quebec City.
You know what? You and me are so alike. All we're thinking about is, okay, who's paying for dinner? There's our news and notes for the week on Junior coming up in moments. Troy Smith, head coach of the Kitchener Rangers, Felix Potvin, former Chicoutimi netminder, Yannick Jean, head coach and general manager of Chicoutimi. But next, Brad Robson, now former GM of the Lethbridge Hurricanes.
Hi, I'm Seth Jones of the Nashville Predators, and I played for the Portland Winterhawks of the Western Hockey League.
Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino. Welcome back to Junior, your CHL podcast, joined now by the now former general manager of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, Brad Robson. Brad, thanks so much for doing this on what is a challenging day, to say the least. We thank you for your time, sir. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks.
How much in advance did you know that today was going to come, and when did it really sink in that this wasn't going to be your team anymore, or has it even?
Well, it's been, like you said, it's been a tough day. I was given word 9 o'clock this morning from the board of directors of the Lethbridge Hurricanes hockey club, hockey operations people. So I got the word 9 o'clock this morning. I probably had an inkling that stuff was happening yesterday afternoon.
Brad, when you go back and look at your tenure, and everyone knows the situation with having to deal with the board and how that ownership scenario works out, how much were they involved in the day-to-day, and how much did you have to run things by the board, or were you kind of given the opportunity to just do things on your own?
No, I had to be in touch and contact with the board with decision-making. And on as if there has been a change in of the guard or the, you know, the board here a few months ago. And so there was new people involved with the decision-making and all that. And a lot of people that were there when I was hired, have moved on. So there is a board in place that represent the shareholders of the Lethbridge Hurricanes Hockey Society. And they definitely have input as to what's, you know, what's happening. And I had conversation with them on a regular basis.
How frustrating. Go ahead, Sammy.
Does that create, I mean, you know, you don't want to get into it too much, but yep. Does that extra layer create a lot of challenges in allowing you to do the general manager's job?
Well, it's a lot different, like, as you said, a board compared to single ownership, dealing with one person. And, you know, you're dealing with, you know, you have shareholders that like to get involved. And, you know, you have a hockey operations board and you have a business operations board of, you know, total of 14 people. So, you know, there's 14 people that, you know, you're having a conversation with and dealing with on every couple of weeks basis with meetings and that.
How frustrating is that as a general manager, all your moves, you know, even before you make them, if you hypothesize them in your brain, have to be cleared by the board? Is that frustrating or challenging situation to work under?
I guess it's a challenge, yes. But I knew going into the job, but mm-hmm. 2 years ago, you know, the Lethbridge Hurricanes were a community-owned hockey club. We weren't private, so I know it was part of the job that I knew going into. So it was part of the challenge, and something that I, you know, there's one thing I want to state is there's some very good people on that board that are there for all the right reasons and to make hockey successful in Lethbridge. And unfortunately, the last couple of years we failed to meet expectations and failed to meet my expectations. I'm a hard worker, I believe, and I'm my biggest thing I want to do is to win hockey games, and we didn't win hockey games. And I know people have to make decisions with your win-loss records.
Brad, when you look at the timing, I mean, last night it was announced that Drake Barahowski was going to be relieved of his duties, and then after you make that decision and obviously run it by the board, you find yourself in the same situation today. I mean, explain the timeline of how things went, and when you went to the board and said, we were going to relieve Drake of his duties, at that time it wasn't said to you, or I'm just having an issue kind of understanding the timeline here.
Well, Drake was relieved of his duties probably yesterday afternoon, and, you know, my timeline, I was relieved of my duties early this morning, all Alberta time.
Okay. And when it comes to Drake, what went into your decision there to relieve Drake of his duties?
Well, I think, you know, it's probably the same thing that happened to my, leaving the hockey club and being fired is, it's our win-loss record. And, you know, we're all gauged by the wins. And unfortunately, we weren't winning hockey games. I believe the hockey club was getting better. I believe that the young players that are in that dressing room today and tonight that will be playing are there for all the right reasons. They want to be successful. They're all fine young men there, and they all want to work hard. And I think the biggest frustration for them, too, is, you know, the losing part, that they see every day when they go to the rink, you know, for practice. So it's been tough for all. It's been tough for our hockey fan base. It's been tough for the season ticket holders. I know that. And, I wish nothing but the best for Lethbridge Hurricanes. You know, there's all those players are in there. I was part of the reason why they are wearing the Hurricane sweater, and I'll cheer for them. And I'll be in their corner if they ever need anything. I would love nothing better than to help them be successful, either on hockey, on the ice, or in business when they mature and get older from their hockey careers, junior careers.
It's a very classy thing to say. I'm curious, how do you handle it when a player, in this case we're talking about young men, asked to be traded? How do you handle that, or how did you handle that? We think of players like Reed Duke, for example.
Well, it was tough, you know, and, you know, the players, were some of the players that requested trades were very good hockey players. A few of those players are going to be cornerstone, you know, the franchise-type players that were, you know, would be there to move us along. And, you know, and people, you know, we talk about our drafts. Well, I think we've had very good drafts. And the people we drafted, you know, at their banner age of 14 were all very good hockey players. And, you know, a lot of them have gone on and continue to go on and are having success, you know, at the major junior level. And it's tough, you know, when you have top players to be moved because you're not dealing from strength. And I knew that on every one of the players that, now that we dealt with, that it wouldn't be a strength for us, and but we had to get value and depth in return. And I'm very proud of the players that we got back in our trades because they're all have been character kids. They're all hardworking kids that come in and they battled together and they've worked hard. And like I said earlier, every one of those kids I'd do anything for to help them with their future.
Brad, any regrets when you look back at your tenure? Is there anything you would have done differently?
I wish I had a magic formula to win hockey games.
Yeah.
You know, and there, we were getting better this year. Like, there were games that we lost that we could have won. And like I said to the coaches a couple weeks ago, like, in the last couple years, we lost games where the first star was the other team's goalie. And for a couple years, that hasn't happened. So I know the team is getting better. I know there's great work ethic, and they all have passion and love for the game. And they all... Hopefully they all rally around what's happened to the last couple of days to make themselves a better hockey team, better and better people, you know, in the community.
You know, it looks like Stuart Skinner's really turning some heads in net for Lethbridge as well. Why don't we end on this one then, on a positive note? I know this is a very challenging day for you. As you look back on your tenure there, what are you most proud of?
Just the players that are in that dressing room right now, I think, and the coaches. And how hard they're working to make these players successful, both on and off the ice, and the players' community involvement. We've increased that lots. All the players in the Lethbridge Hurricanes go to school, college or high school, and we're more involved in the community. And we've got players that are now every player in our club is involved with minor hockey here in Lethbridge, helping teams. You know, on the ice, they've all been assigned teams. So, for me, the biggest thing is the stuff that's happening away from the rink. With the players, and they've all been so supportive of that. They haven't had anybody come say, oh, they roll their eyes or we don't want to do that. Yeah. You know, when guys are sick or injured and can't do it, we've always had players this year that have jumped up and replaced them. And I think that's probably the biggest thing is the players' involvement with their schooling and with their within the community of Lethbridge and Southern Alberta.
You're a class guy. Brad, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks so much,
what
Brad.
Is a very okay, difficult thanks day. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm Joffrey Leupold. I played for the Medicine Hat Tigers.
Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino. Joined now by the general manager and coach of Chicoutimi. Kind of a Chicoutimi-themed day here with Felix Potvin on the program as well, Sam. Yannick Jean joining the program now. Yannick, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today, sir?
Thanks, guys. Good to be there.
The pleasure is ours. What is it like being back where your coaching career once began?
It's really fun. I'm enjoying it so far. I mean, people have been great with me. They're all happy to see me back. There's a lot of people also with the organization back when I was here. And so everybody's like a family here and just really glad to be part of this family again.
You know, I've been there and I've watched games there, and I know just how engaged the crowd can be. I mean, how much pressure do you feel going into this job, knowing now that, you know, kind of everything rests on your shoulders?
I don't really feel pressure, but I really feel excitement. I mean, the fans are feeding people here when things are going well, and they're just waiting for something to happen. And you know what? I just hope that I can make... something out of it early. If we're able to do, to make something happen, I mean, the players are going to feed right from the fans' den.
You leave Victoriaville for Chicoutimi. What was the first order of business? What was the first thing, or what is still the first thing you need to accomplish right now in Chicoutimi?
I need to make sure the players are accountable first for their act. I need discipline off the ice, on the ice. And if we're, and the second thing, I need work ethic. And I think that both are really are related, because if you have discipline off ice, if you have the discipline on ice, you'll have the energy to have a good work ethic. And, you know, this is always what I've been all about, work ethic-wise. And that I feel that's the most important thing I have to change here.
It's been quite a ride for you over the last year and a half. You go from coaching Victoriaville to kind of out of work and then back there as the GM. I mean, did you ever picture that this opportunity to return to Chicoutimi would ever become available again? I mean, you played there, your coaching career started there. I mean, did you ever think it would come back to this?
I mean, I didn't really sat and think about it. I mean, of course, you know, once in a while you come here, like this summer we had we had the 20th anniversary of the cup here. All the guys were back, and you know, sometimes you see that, you know, maybe I could be back one day, but I honestly never thought it was going to be that soon.
How many of those players from when you played in the early 90s with Chicoutimi, how many of those players do you still keep in touch with?
Oh, I mean, there was like 17 of us when we did that this summer. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and I'm really going to use that, what happened in the past. I thought it was the best chemistry a team could ever have. And that's the reason why we went so deep into the playoff. We played 27 playoff games that year, 3 rounds out of 7, 1 out of 6. You know, it was amazing. It was amazing here. And if you're able, like I said earlier, if you're able to create that, I mean, you're able to create a special chemistry. And, you know, we always still talk to each other. And even though the guys that I didn't talk to for like 20 years, I mean, it's like we were together like last week, 20 years mm-hmm. later. So things don't really change. When you're able to create something special, I mean, go for it, and hopefully we'll be able to create something like this year.
You know, we talked to Felix Potfan not too long ago here on the podcast and talked about his time with Chicoutimi. What about another goaltender? Curious if he was at the celebration in the summer. Was Eric Fichaud there?
Yeah, he was for sure, and we still talk, I mean, every week. Like I said, it's like special people when you have the chance to win with some people, and, you know, we always stay in touch with most of them.
I'm always interested when a coach goes to a new team, do you bring your sense of what you want to do to the table, or do you have to assess your personnel and your players and adapt your coaching style to what you have? How does it work for you?
I really want to put two things in place, like discipline and work ethic. Like the rest, I told my assistant, I said, listen up, we're not going to change anything about system-wise right now.
Okay.
The most important thing is just to step up the work ethic, make sure we're on the same page, make sure there's no let go. We want to make sure everything falls in place. Everything has to be hard for the players. We want to get them out of their comfort zone on a daily basis. If we're able to do so, everything's going to get better. So this is the two things I really want to change. But you cannot, in this meanwhile, you cannot change everything.
Yep.
You have to be patient. You have to make sure you know that you're not going to change the players 100%, but you sure can make them better individually. And that's the approach I had. If I make every single one of them better individually, just a little bit better, of course this team's going to be better. And I don't think there's bad coaches in this league, and there's bad coaches in the game. Everybody's got their system. Everybody, the difference is how you make players work into it.
You know, I look at the division you're in, and I think about the Midwest division in the Ontario League. I think about the U.S. division in the Western Hockey League, but the East division in the Quebec League
wow.
might be the second toughest division in all the Canadian Hockey League. How good is that to be able to challenge your guys every night knowing that you're going to play a Victor, a Bécomo, a Rimouski, Quebec, whatever the case may be, knowing that you're going to have tough games pretty much every night?
You're right. You're totally right. We have tough games most of the night. But once you understand that challenge makes you better, I mean, you understand that you step up your work ethic, you work harder. And if you do so, you get better as a team. It's not only about result. Sometimes it's about the way you do things. And some nights you have to put some emphasis on the way instead of putting on the results. And I've been working with Bruce so far this year in Victoriaville. It was the same way. Let's put some emphasis on the way we do things, and we'll grow up as a team. And that's a little bit how I want to put things in place here.
You know, when you were with Victoriaville, certainly you had a look and knew what the squad in Chicoutimi was all about. In your estimation, who do you think can be a better hockey player on your team?
I mean, of course, the old guys like Dauphin, like Ranger. It's guys that had a lot of success in the past. That kind of, you know, they became go-to guys. They didn't really have maybe to push the pace on a daily basis in order to have the quality ice time and everything. So it's the two players that I know we can push, and I know they can carry this team over. So those are the two players. Of course, Boudreau, who's been injured most of the year, only played like five games so far, is one of them, but he's not playing actually. So the two things right now would be Dauphin and Ranger, and Paquin Boudreau later on when he comes back.
Jeff and I are always interested in the draft, and one name that we keep hearing is Nicolas Roy. How is he coming along, and where do you see him in terms of the draft for this year?
I mean, he's a great prospect. So far this year, things didn't really he didn't really put all things together. I mean, he's got the size, he's got the skill, he has the vision. I mean, the only thing we have to do right now is just make him accountable for everything he does on the ice. Things were maybe a little bit easy for them, but now, you know, at 16 years old, sometimes you excuse bad shift, you excuse bad performance. But at 17, now it's different. Sometimes the players feel a little bit more pressure also. So it's one of the players that we really have to make accountable, put things in perspective. Listen up, this is what I need from you. Just don't think about anything else. Put your mind into this, and things are going to get better. But he's definitely a player that everybody is waiting to see more of.
Would you coach him in any different way or specific way or particular way, considering this is his draft year, or do you treat him the same as if he was 18 or 19 years old?
I think you have to talk to them a little bit more. Just say that they don't second-guess themselves. They don't doubt themselves. Sometimes they have bad nights, but they don't understand. Sometimes as a player, you're out there, you're having a bad game, you sit on the bench in the third period and say, wow, there's like 15 scouts, five scouts, they're never going to draft me. But, you know, scouts don't come just for one game. They come to see you for 10, 15, 20 games. So, you know, you have to make sure to make them understand it. Consistency makes a difference, not just one game here and then.
Yannick, as always, we appreciate your time, sir. Bonne chance the rest of the way, and we'll catch up down the road.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Yannick. Pleasure. Take care.
I'm Jonathan Durant from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I play for the Halifax Mooseheads in the Major Junior League.
Welcome back to the program, and welcome to our weekly CHL alumni segment. This week, with one of the most colorful goaltenders the league has seen in the last 30 years. Of course, he played in the National Hockey League. We remember him from such teams as the Maple Leafs, the Islanders, the Vancouver Canucks, the Los Angeles Kings. He finished up his career playing a season with the Boston Bruins. But before that, he was a three-year member of Chicoutimi, taking the team to the Memorial Cup in 1991. He is Felix Potvin. He is also a midget AAA coach, and he joins us now in Gatineau. Kat, how are you today, sir?
Pretty good, guys. You?
We're well. Tell us about, first of all, before we get into the career, tell us a little bit about the midget AAA team that you're coaching and how long you've been doing that.
It's second year as part of being the head coach, fourth with the team. I was an assistant coach before, and it's coaching a team in Magog, which is pretty close from where I live, so I'm having a lot of fun coaching the kids.
You have your son, Xavier. He's playing for you. Is that right?
Yeah, that's his third year playing goal. He's drafted with Quebec Rempart, and it's been quite a challenge, but it's been fun coaching him.
When you talk about the challenges, I mean, when you're a father and you're the head coach and technically the goalie coach, because why wouldn't you be? I mean, how do you mix and match all of those things together?
It's actually easier for me because I'm less nervous. I got other stuff to worry about behind the bench than just watching it.
What?
But it's been pretty good. I think we've been pretty good at dealing with hockey at the rink and then leaving it at the rink. And once we get home, we try not to talk about it. Of course, it's not possible. Once in a while, you always come back on it. But it's been a lot of fun.
I'm curious how you teach your son or how you taught your son growing up, because when you played, you came from an era where you made saves as opposed to just blocking the shot or playing percentages. How do you teach your son the art of goaltending?
Same approach I had with him. I think I want him when he was young, when he was coming up, I wanted him to learn how to stop the puck before making him into a mole, like what I call like a robot goalie, which was going around for a bit. And mm-hmm. Of course, you try to deal with the mental aspect a little more. How he sees the game, how he deals with bad goals or bad games, and I think it's been working out all right.
You know, Jeff, that I'm glad you brought up that point. But the one question I would have in terms of the evolution of goaltending and that sort of thing. I mean, What are the challenges now in teaching your son the position? Let me just run a theory by you. I remember back at guys my age, I'm 43 now and maybe a bit older than I, used to always play baseball in the off season. That's not the case now. Kids play hockey right through in the spring and whatever else. And I find a lot of goaltenders these days really suffer with the glove hand as a result of probably not playing baseball when they're kids. I don't know if you played when you were a kid. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. It's anytime every year we get new goalie coming to camp, I can tell right away which one plays baseball and which one don't, because guys that do play the game of baseball are used to follow the ball to their glove, and a lot of time these days now you see goalie making or trying to make glove plays, not looking at the puck, not following it all the way in the glove, and then you're absolutely right that I think it helps a lot if you do play baseball or do other sports for your hands.
Also curious about the nature of coaching as a former goaltender. It is very rare, Felix, as you well know, for players from your position to make the transition behind the bench. Emil Francis may have been the best old Rangers bench boss. Of course, now Patrick Waugh with the Colorado Avalanche. There have been a sprinkling of goaltenders in between. Why do you think it's so rare for goaltenders to transition from playing net to going behind the bench?
I don't know. I think maybe because... Well, first of all, there's less goaltender. They only have two,
sure,
two per team, so there's less goaltender than there is forward or defenseman. So maybe that's a part of it. But as for myself, I started once I retired. I started coaching little kids, and then I just like teaching, teaching the aspect that I learned, and then just kept with it. I enjoy watching the game behind the bench and being part of the game.
Would the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League be somewhere where you'd like to kind of move on from the Midget AAA ranks? I mean, I know how good the Midget AAA is in Quebec, but it would seem the logical next step would be to coach in the Q. Would that be something that would interest you?
Well, it's not something that I was thinking of doing it when I first started. I was having fun doing it here, but of course, once you do it, you get involved, and the challenge kind of gets to you. Like when you're a player, you want to go to the next level. You want to see if you can do it, and then. It's funny. I had talked with a junior team this week. As a matter of fact, it was just not the right timing for me right now. But it's not something that.
Being joined by Felix Potfan, right now coaching his son's Midget AAA team in Gatineau. Let's go back to your career, playing with Chicoutimi of the QMJHL from 1988 to 1991. When you look back at those three seasons with Chicoutimi, what are some of the main memories, Felix, that come to your mind?
Well, I've always said that that's pretty much the best time I had playing hockey, and that's what I told the kids. I said they need to enjoy it when they're at these level, the midget, triple A, the major, junior, and I was fortunate to have a great hockey town that supported their team. In Chicoutimi, there wasn't too much around. Quebec City was the closest team, about 3 hours away. So we had great crowd, and the way the 3 years went, I mean, the first year we missed the playoff. I played all but I think 5 games, and then the second year we made the playoff, lost in the first round, and then the third year to win it all, finished first, winning the playoff and going to the Memorial Cup was just great, man.
Yeah, the Memorial Cup, the MasterCard Memorial Cup is an experience that's reserved for very few. Would you say at that point would be your most memorable time previous to the National Hockey League, and just in terms of being able to get there, playing such a prestigious event, and we all know what's happened to Mike Babcock, who won it that year, and so on and so forth. But what were your experiences in the MasterCard Memorial Cup, and how did you feel about having played in it?
Well, it's a great experience. The ending was a bit tough. We lost in overtime when one of our players scored in our net. But it's great memory. And I was fortunate that year. The Memorial Cup was in Quebec City, so there the Colisée was full and packed, and it was a lot of fun.
Didn't you guys have a major brawl with the Spokane squad in that Memorial Cup?
I'm not sure. I can't remember that. I'm not sure a major one. It might have been a few brawl, yeah, because we had some pretty tough players.
Yeah, I seem to remember George Brett's squad had a pretty tough one. I think it was like in the third or fourth game of the tournament. You guys really went for one. How much extra pressure was that for you? I mean, you go through, you win the Quebec Major Junior League championship. You're awarded the Guy Lafleur Trophy as playoff MVP. And then comes the Memorial Cup. How much extra pressure was that on you?
I've never saw it as extra pressure, no matter what level I played with. It's just something that I learned to grow with, learned to deal with. And, I always thought, the bigger the game, the bigger the thrill. And I think every good hockey player that make it don't see it as pressure. They see it as challenge and having fun playing the big games.
How much, when you look at today's game, I mean, how much has it changed? Some of the kids that you're dealing with are going to go on and have good careers in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, but it seems that the game has changed. We had Kelly Rudy on, and he talked about, how many fights he was in when he played in Medicine Hat, and even yourself talking about, some fights that may have occurred in junior. But how much has the game changed since you played, when you talk about the Q?
Well, I think it's, obviously with all the rules change, and then the game hasn't been played the same level. I think you get more offense, a little bit less hitting. There's more room to skate, definitely less fighting. But I think the biggest change is dealing with, is being able to make the transition. Dealing with the kids nowadays, it's a lot different than what we were playing. And there's a lot more agent involved, a lot more parents involved. So and whether it's good or bad, I think you just learn to need to learn to deal with it.
At what point, Felix, did you really think to yourself, maybe it was while you're in Chicoutimi, maybe it was before then, at what point in your life did you say to yourself, I think I have a shot at playing at the NHL level here?
It was truly meant to AAA. I think I've always played for fun. Always enjoyed playing the game. Not, of course, you dream that maybe someday you're going to play when you play in the backyard or play in the street, but when I got midget triple A, if I'm able to play here, maybe it's because I got some talent or I got a chance to move on. And then, of course, once I got drafted junior, I said, well, I got a shot of maybe doing this, and better put the time in, and it worked out great.
Felix, I've seen a couple of games in Chicoutimi, and for those who haven't been there, I mean, the crowd is outstanding. The barn is loud. Can you describe to people who've never been there what the experience is like playing there?
Well, it's their, you know, like I said earlier, I mean, there's nothing really close to it. That's their team. They take it to heart pretty seriously. They want to have a good team. They enjoy going to the game, and if you win, they'd be the loudest crowd. It'd be a lot of fun. But then at the same time, if you don't perform or you don't win, you'll hear it too. So, but you know, it's the same as playing in Toronto or Montreal pro. I think it's the best way to do it. I mean, you're playing the game for those reactions, and I think it's another way to motivate yourself.
Let me ask you a question about Toronto, and a lot of people, everybody remembers the 1993 run, almost making it to the Stanley Cup Final against Montreal. Your head coach then, Pat Burns, finally goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame. When you hear the name Pat Burns, what comes to Felix Pott fans' mind?
Well, the best coach I ever had, any category. I think he was a guy that everyone respected. He was respecting his player. He was tough. He was tough, grumpy, but you know, he's a coach that he knew what he wanted from you. He knew what he was going to tell you was true, and there's no two way of telling stuff.
Have you taken some of his ideas and incorporated them into your coaching?
Well, that's what I told my guys one day. I said that, well, I was always wondering why Pat Byrne was always grumpy. I said, no, I think I understand. The moment you start laughing with them, things are getting easy. But, you know, no, he's shown me a lot of great things. And he's, you know, I really enjoy playing under Pat.
You know, that 1993 year in Toronto was insane, and I've lived in Toronto or in the outskirts for pretty much my entire life, and that year specifically, it must have been hard for Maple Leafs players even just to walk around, even just to get to Maple Leaf Gardens. Felix, I remember talking to Doug Gilmour once, and I said, Doug, how could you even walk from your, I think you had a condo on Church Street at that point. I said, how could you even walk from Church Street to Wood Street to get in the entrance and behind Maple Leaf Gardens to get in? He said, well, it was tough, but Pat let me do something. He didn't let any of the other players do. He would put on a Doug Gilmour jersey and a Maple Leafs baseball hat, and he would walk in there as himself, because no one would think that Doug Gilmour would walk around the Doug Gilmour jersey.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I remember we were parking on the backside of the building, and I remember one day my mom and dad came up from Montreal. We just beat St. Louis, and then we were parking our cars on the backside of the Maple Leaf Garden outside, and it was almost impossible of backing up from there. People were shaking the car, and my mom got freaked out. So, said, I'm not coming back, or I leave before you get out. So, but it was pretty impressive for me being there my first year, witnessed that.
Oh, that's outstanding. Listen, Felix, thanks so much for spending time with us on our podcast today. Much appreciated. Best of luck to you and your son's team, and best of luck the rest of the way. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Felix.
Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.
Felix Potvin, former netminder for Chicoutimi in the QMJHL.
I'm Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Sarnia Sting in the OHL.
This week on Friday Night Hockey, you can enjoy the Kitchener Rangers and the Sarnia Sting. And Sam, today we're being joined by Troy Smith, head coach of the Kitchener Rangers, who was a very happy guy yesterday. You know why, Sam? Because they beat the Erie Otters, and it was teddy bear toss nights. And his captain got it over with early. How stressful, Troy Smith, is the teddy bear toss game for a coach?
Well, we talk about it all the time, and talking to Pete and Steve, it's probably the most stressful night for a coach, without a doubt. And in some ways, it's you just want to get the goal over with, and then the win is a bonus. But to get it done early definitely was a huge relief.
You know, not that Liam is Gretzky or anything, but I think it was his 10th career OHL goal, and pretty good timing against his former team.
Yeah, it was great for him. He's obviously a character kid that's not not known for being on the score sheet a lot, but to score a goal like that, it's one that the kids all look forward to, and I was happy for him.
Was there a little something extra sitting in his stall when he came back after the game? Was a thank you from the coach?
Yeah, there was actually a huge banana teddy bear that was thrown on the ice that we managed to throw in his stall and make him feel a little bit sheepish about the whole thing.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's been a bit of an interesting run for your club. I mean, you reel off a streak of 16 games in which you get a point, and then kind of go into a bit of a tailspin, and then get things back on track last night. I mean, how tough is it to, with coaching in junior hockey, to maintain consistency? And you've done a pretty good job of that when I look at that 16-game streak in particular.
Yeah, it's been really an up and down season. You know, you look early on, and we had some rough games. You know, we lost 6-1 in the opening night, and then 8-3 to Erie, I think our fourth game, and then after that, as you mentioned, the 16 straight games. But you know, for us, you know, I think we could kind of see that we were getting away from what made us successful during that streak later on, and we were maybe winning some games that we shouldn't, and then, you know, when you let those bad habits creep in, you know, they don't break overnight. They don't come in overnight, and you don't break them overnight. But I was really happy with the way the guys have battled through it, and hopefully, again, as you mentioned last night, was a step in the right direction.
You know, there have been, as Sam mentioned, a number of streaks for the Kitchener Rangers so far this year. As a head coach, you know, there's a saying out there that you know you're heading into a losing streak when you're winning games that you shouldn't, and you know you're coming out when you're losing games you should win. Is that true?
It's very true. And a lot of it, you hear it, it sounds kind of silly, but it's puck luck. And, you know, the goals that we scored last night, a lot of them were around the crease. And, you know, in some games previous where I thought maybe we played better than the result, that puck just wasn't bouncing our way, whereas last night, you know, we got a number of bounces, and that's usually just the way it works. It's a funny game that way, and you know, with junior hockey players, it's just a matter of trying to manage those emotions and making sure that, you know, those highs aren't too high and the lows aren't too low, you know. And you look at you know, kind of the streak after the 16 game streak where we're struggling a little bit, you can look at it where you've dropped, you know, so many, you know, 5 of 6 or whatever it may have been, and or you can look at it and say, okay, we've played, you know, 28 games here now, and we've got points in 20 of them, which is, you know, for me, that's the way we're trying to look at things, is that we've had a real good start to the season. There's still a long way to go and lots of improvements to be had, but, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're winning or whether you're losing, it's just about getting better.
One area that seems to me that's been shored up for you is the goaltending situation with Dawson Carty and Matthew Greenfield. How are you feeling about that situation? And has the addition of Carty really helped your club, maybe challenge Greenfield a little bit, but also steady things for you?
I think it's been both. You know, we liked Dawson in his draft year. Unfortunately for him, you know, I think he only played in, you know, 11 or 12 games last year, and I'm not sure if he had more than 2 starts. So, you know, we weren't really sure what we were getting, but, you know, since he's come in, he's a great kid, and I think you are right that he's pushed Matt Greenfield to be better, and when he's been in the pipes for us, he's given us a chance to win every night. And when you have a goalie, it's, you know, that's playing the way Dawson has, it's a real calming influence, and just gives, I think, the players up front a little bit more confidence to maybe, you know, take a few more chances to try and create some offense, knowing that he's there to back him up.
Talk to us a little bit about Matt Greenfield that you mentioned. He's from the goaltending hotbed of Florida. I know he worked a lot with Rob Tallis pretty much his entire life. How did you guys find him?
Well, it was at the draft, and Rob Tallis had actually called my old boss, Steve Spott, and just mentioned that, you know, he'd worked with this kid and, you know, thought to give him a chance. And so we did, and I think when we drafted him, he's only about 5'9", 5'10". Obviously very raw, and you know, he went back, played midget for a couple of years, came in last year, and in the meantime had grown 2 or 3 inches. And you know, he's a motivated kid that comes to the rink every day to work hard and try to get better. And you know, I think you've seen that in this game. And you know, for him to come from midget hockey to have to play a lot of minutes last year for our hockey club says a lot about his character.
I look at a couple of guys that are leading your team in scoring right now, and Bailey, you know very well, Buffalo pick, and Ryan McGinnis, both eligible to play for the U.S. or at least get invited to the camp for the World Juniors. Now, McGinnis, I can understand, but Bailey is a 19-year-old. Was that a bit of a surprise for you when he wasn't asked to participate in U.S. selection camp?
I don't think that any of these decisions surprise me anymore. You know, it's just such a tough decision to make, and you know, having been through that, just even at the under-17 level, I understand that. That said, you know, Justin's been a huge reason for our good start so far this year. He's a dominant player that dedicated himself this summer to getting stronger, and has really dedicated himself on the ice to becoming a more complete player, whether it be, you know, through back checking or blocking shots, things of that nature. But at the end of the day, I think Justin knows that he did everything that he could do to make that hockey club. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but he also understands that, you know, his goal at the end of the day is to try and help our team win, and then obviously long-term become a Buffalo Sabre.
A couple of second-generation players, of course, Troy on your team, Max Iafredi, Father Al, Sammy just mentioned Ryan McInnes, Al, of course, there, the father. Any interaction, communication between the parents and the coaching staff of the organization?
No, you know, Al, you know, we talked to him a few times. I guess they're both Al's, but,
yeah.
You know, just kind of more in passing. You know, with Al McInnes, he was nice enough to set up a meeting for us to meet with Ken Hitchcock, which was great, and share some ideas. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're both just hockey parents that, you know, obviously want to see their sons do well and see our team do well. But they understand that, you know, the kids have to find their own way, and I'm sure that they're supportive, you know, family dinners or whatever it may be, but they allow us to coach, and for the most part, you know, they haven't interacted too much with us.
What do you learn? What have you learned over the course of your tenure as being the head coach of the Rangers now? I mean, there's you long tenure there as an assistant, but it is much different when you take over the head job. What are you doing differently that you might have learned last year, you know, as the head coach?
Oh, yeah, I've learned that you get a lot less sleep, that's for sure, when all of a sudden you get that title. But, you know, I think for the most part, you know, I'm still a young guy that's trying to find my own way and find my own identity. So, you know, just like the players, there's some things that I've done that, you know, I'm probably not proud of, and, you know, things that I would do differently. But, you know, it's just a matter of trying to manage everybody's expectations with reality and keeping an even keel. And, you know, the biggest thing with kids today now is, you know, long gone are the days where you can yell and scream up and down. And don't get me wrong, there's a time and a place for that still. But for the most part now, it's about building relationships with these kids, and they want to learn. You know, they want to be taught and they want to be coached, but the way they want to be coached is by asking questions as to how, why, what, whatever it may be. And communication has really become a key, I think, for any successful coach, and that's something that myself and my whole staff is trying to accomplish.
You know, there have been a number of players that's either as a head coach or an assistant coach, Troy, you've helped to finish up and make ready for the NHL, whether it's Landeskog or Skinner or Bodker or Reeder. Who are some of the ones that you're most proud of? You look at it and you say, you know what, this guy listened, worked hard, put in the full effort, and now look at him in the NHL.
Well, I think Toby Reeder's a great example of that. Coming from Germany, it's not, you know, it's not a, you know, a hockey graveyard by any stretch, but it's not exactly a hockey hotbed either. And, you know what, for him to go to the American League for just only a year and get back into it says a lot about him. And, you know, we've had so many kids that have come through this program, and it's something that we pride ourselves on is trying to prepare them for that next level. And, you know, I'd have a tough time really putting my finger on one. You know, the one that I probably got the closest relationship with would be Bodker, just because during his draft year, his parents obviously weren't around, so we spent a lot of time in the car driving back and forth from Toronto, whether it be for the Top Prospects game or NHL interviews, things like that. And, you know, I think as cliche as it sounds, we're equally proud of every one of them.
When you look at some of the alumni and upholding that the tradition, the excellence that this Kitchener Rangers program has had, do you have to coach in a different way? Do you have to do things a little bit differently as a result of that and trying to uphold that great Kitchener Rangers history?
Yes and no. You know, for me, it's the only way I really know. You know, I have some relationships with guys outside of Pete DeBoer and Steve Spott, but at the end of the day, those two guys have been my greatest influence and the only two guys that I've really coached under. So for me, it's not about doing anything different. It's about doing what I know, and that's, you know, trying to hold everybody accountable to the same standard and playing the right way. And by playing the right way, I mean playing a team game and trying to play four lines when we can, but, you know, playing a style that's going to get them ready for the next level, but also trying to help us win.
Let's go back a little bit in history, Troy. What am I of recent memory? Favorite junior hockey shifts. You're on the bench, of course, with the Kitchener Rangers, facing off against the Guelph Storm. This is in Kitchener, 2010.
Tyler Carroll.
It's the shot blocking. 5-on-3 penalty kill of Jamie Dornbosch with two shots, Ryan Murphy with one as well. I don't know that I've ever seen a player from another team get a standing ovation in your barn, but walk us through what went through your head when you saw the Tyler Carroll shot block shift.
It was amazing to watch, and you know, I think it's a credit to our fan base just that they recognized it and gave, you know, a rival team player a standing ovation. I just remember, you know, kind of wondering how much that must have hurt the kid, but then or just recognizing how much character that kid had, and you know, it's definitely the best shot blocking display that I've seen. I can't remember the exact count, you know, 3 or 4 times, but you know, Jamie Dornbosch had a bomb for a shot, and he just kept taking it and kept taking it, and you know, it was a great display. I wish the guys had got it through for a goal, but at the end of the day, I think that's what the game, what makes this game so special, is just a mutual respect for everybody, and Tyler Carroll's definitely somebody who earned the respect of our whole community that night.
Did part of you say, please don't shoot again, guys?
Well, they probably should have looked for a pass, thinking about it now. But, no, you kind of think, just keep pounding away. At some point, this kid's going to get out of the way. But, you know, unfortunately for us, he decided to keep getting in the way.
Yeah, he's turned into an unbelievable CIS player. Looking ahead to Friday Night Hockey, it's the Sarnia Sting and the Kitchener Rangers. What do you expect to see out of Sarnia starting to play much better of late?
Yeah, Trevor's got them going. I think they're 8-2 in their last 10, whatever it may be. And you know what? They're a highly offensive team. You know, you look at guys like D'Angelo and Zaka, who I'm not sure if he's playing or not yet, but you know, and even Kurestelev, guys like that. So, you know, we're going to have to be on our toes and make sure that we manage the puck properly for us. You know, we've always had the philosophy that it's much more about what we're going to do, and that's what we want to do is dictate the pace and try to play our style of game, which isn't the back and forth. It's a little bit more about getting pucks in deep, to quote Ken Reed, and, you know, get the work down low.
Oh, that was a great reference right there, Troy. Well, I got to tell Reader about that. He'll be amused. Sam and I talk a lot about the division of death in the OHL, and Troy, you are in it. How tough is it when you look up the standings and you see teams like, oh, I don't know, Erie and Guelph and London?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge every night. You look at, you know, we had you know, really two, you know, questionable weekends where, you know, you drop a few games and all of a sudden you go from you know, second to last place in your division. But at the end of the day, I enjoy it. You know what, every night you're going up against a good coach on the other side and good teams, and really that's what you want. You know, I'd love to have a few more blowout games, but at the end of the day, I think it makes us better, and I think it makes everybody better for those teams that can make playoffs.
One of a few teams that's not going to be affected, well, by the under-17s, because that's already been played, but no players, imports or otherwise, going to the World Juniors. How do you look at this opportunity over the next month for your hockey club?
Well, we've obviously discussed that already with Connor being out of Erie's lineup, and obviously recognizing that they're a different team without him. But you know, for us, that's really out of our control. You know, the teams have been selected, none of our guys are going, and in some ways, you know what, you got to make sure that the guys aren't distracted by that, thinking that the games are going to be any easier, because they're not. You know, the other side of it is we can use it as motivation that, you know, none of the countries saw fit that any of our players were I guess good enough to play, and you know, let's show everybody wrong and let's prove everybody wrong that you know, we're a team that has a lot of good players, and especially when we play together as a team.
You know, there's coachable moments and inspirational moments. I guess this is a combination of both. I can't remember the last time the Kitchener Rangers didn't have someone going somewhere. Pick your country. Is this a moment where you can, you know, both motivate and coach these guys? And, you know, it's always been said that coaches love the them against us kind of, you know, marquee. Is that a situation like this for you, Troy?
Yeah, we've talked about it. And, you know, again, you know, our mantra this year is respect. And, you know, I think we lost a little bit of it last year with the season that we had, and now we're just trying to regain it. And the way to regain it is to go out and work hard and try to continue to prove people wrong. The other side of it is that, you know, that some of these teams are going to be missing players, and respecting the fact that they're still good teams. No matter who's in the lineup, it's a great league. And you know, if you're caught sleeping on any night, you're going to get burned.
Just wanted to touch quickly before we let you go. Your assistant coaches, Mike McKenzie and Mike Van Ryn, what have they meant to you, and how much help have they been for you?
They've been a huge help. You know what? They're both. We got a good group in that. you know, we're both around, all three of us are around the same age, and, you know, I think we all bring some different opinions, different styles, but at the end of the day, you know, as a coach, you want people that are going to make you better, and that's what these two guys have done. Mike Van Ryan has done a wonderful job with our defense, you know, just teaching them the details of the game after his, NHL career, and then Mike McKenzie's a smart hockey guy who played in the American League a little bit, and, you know, and he works extremely hard to make sure that our forwards are getting better, and as a group, I think that we challenge each other with different ideas, whether it be systems, tactics, or motivation or otherwise, to try and get the best out of our hockey club, and they've been a pleasure to work with, and very fortunate to start my career with those two guys.
I think McKenzie's dad does some scouting on the side, too, doesn't he? Seem to see him come draft time as well.
Yeah, he does a little bit, you know, and then his brother's a little bit of a sideline reporter, I guess, that we might be seeing on Friday Night Hockey. But I told him to take it easy on me and not wear one of his fancy suits.
Hey, last one for you, speaking of the draft quickly. Gustav Franzén, how good can this kid be?
I think he's just scratching the surface right now. Like a lot of European players, it's a bit of an adjustment coming over with the style of play and the schedule. But, you know, Gustav, his nickname's Goose, is a very smart player, very intelligent player. And, you know, he's a kid that's played in every situation for us. And, you know, one of those situations where, you know, maybe his contribution doesn't always show up on the score sheet. You know, sometimes it's just on a little small play that goes unnoticed by your average fan, but is definitely noticed by his teammates and his coaches.
Listen, Troy, thanks so much for spending as much time today as you have with us. Congratulations on the big Teddy Bear Toss win against Erie, and best of luck on Friday against the Sting.
Great. Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate
thanks,
having
Smitty.
Me.
I'm Ryan Callahan on the Tampa Bay Lightning. I played for the Guelph Storm in the Ontario Hockey League.
All right, Sam, as we wrap up the podcast for this week, as we do each and every week, namely three, we'll finish up with the BMO CHL Top 10 rankings. This for week 12 across the CHL, and it is the Oshawa Generals in at the number one spot. A surprise for you?
Not really. I mean, they took care of Erie, and, you know, this is a hockey club now that you really have to start to believe in. Appleby, the goaltender of the month. A lot of good things going on there. Michael Del Cole playing great hockey. I mean,
yes.
not surprising me. I mean, three regulation losses. That's crazy to think about that. Four losses altogether through 27 games.
It's so interesting, too, the way that there was believed to be some pressure placed on Jeff Toohey last year, then general manager of the Generals, to go all in on last season, figuring the Eastern Conference was jump ball. Eventually North Bay ended up winning that side of the equation. But there was a lot of pressure in his office to do something significant last year. He didn't. Was relieved of his duties at the end of the season. And now the Oshawa Generals, maybe because Toohey didn't make those moves, are in a better position going forward now.
Yeah, they are. And DJ Smith is probably very thankful that that happened. You know, Roger Hunt, no one knows it better than he, having worked in the coach's room and now working as the general manager. So they got a good thing going on there. And I tell you
they
what, they're you know, that Eastern Conference I thought was going to be a lot stronger this year, and it's not, Jeff. And Oshawa, to me right now, is head over heels, not just the best in the Eastern Conference, not just the best in the Ontario League, but BMO Top 10 says the best in all the CHL right now. So things
pretty impressive.
Good.
Yep. Yeah, although to your point, after Oshawa, that field is open in the Eastern Conference in the OHL. Kelowna Rockets and Rimouski Oceanic occupy spots 2 and 3. Don't look now, but Rimouski are getting to the spot, Sam, we thought they would be all along. Although, they're probably going to miss some key players come World Junior time.
Yeah, that's going to take a bit of a beat down for them, but that's also going to give Serge Beausoleil, the opportunity to go out and play some of his other guys, knowing that, they're feeling very strongly about upholding that top position in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. So, good hockey club. Moran and Gauthier, likely not to be around for Christmas time, but that opens up some opportunities. And, hey, they've played pretty well without Moran for a good, I think, five or six weeks. So, Gauthier's obviously a loss, but then again, he too started the year on the DL. So they've played without both of those guys in the lineup before. They'll have to do it again.
Erie Otters 4, Brandon Wheatkings in at number 5, Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds at 6, St. John's Sea Dogs 7, 8th are the Medicine Hat Tigers, 9th Everett Silvertips, Quebec Ramparts finish up the top 10. For me, notable here, the Medicine Hat Tigers, maybe the Stingiest defense in the Western League, Sam?
Oh, my gosh, they're unbelievable. And I don't even like to get started on this topic, and you and I will have it one day on the podcast. But, you know, the non-import goalie rule, just don't even get me started on that.
I know.
You know, I will say this, though. As honorable mention, two teams I'd like to talk about really quickly here. The Regina Pats and John Paddock and the job he's done over there. They've won 9 of their last 10 games, and don't look now, but the Guelph Storm isn't going away that quickly either. They've won 8 of their last 10 games. And so those are two teams that you might see make an appearance in that BMO Top 10 next week.
You know, Guelph is a curious team, and I want to talk about Regina here in a second, but Guelph is a curious team because they do have some decisions to make come OHL trade deadline. Clearly not as deep as they were last year. Last year's team was a juggernaut. Last year's team was a freak. If you're Kelly, you really have to spend Christmas and have a good, honest talk with yourself about how good you see this team being, knowing that they're competing in the Conference of Death in the Ontario Hockey League. And you could really do yourself some good setting yourself up by moving players. I don't know, Fabry and Dickinson and Tyler Bertuzzi. Ben Harper's name certainly out there as well. You could really set this Guelph Storm up for the next wave of Guelph Storm teams. Or do you say to yourself, let's go the other way and see if we can load up here. What do you do if you're Mike Kelly?
Well, I know he's pretty well positioned in terms of assets and draft picks, and he's got some good young players as well. So, I don't know. I would just kind of be real patient. I'd see what the competitors do, and I'd hang tight. But, you know, when you're looking at Fabry and Dickinson as two high-end first-round guys, and then, you know, Bertuzzi, the ads of a couple of overagers in Marchese and Cairns, once Marchese gets back playing again, you know, I don't know if they have enough as it stands today. I really like their back end. But I'd say one piece on either side of the puck might be enough to kind of put them right in the mix to be a Western Conference contender again.
Regina Pats, glad you brought them up. We had the Peterborough Petes on Friday Night Hockey last week. And when you think of junior hockey, two teams for a lot of people, myself included, pop right to mind. One of the Peterborough Petes, the other is the Regina Pats. And while the Petes sort of continue to struggle, as they have in recent notes, here are the Regina Pats, legacy team in the CHL, and they're competing hard each and every night. And the one player, say what you want about Hunt and Connor Gay, but the one guy that I just adore and what he's doing with Regina is a 16-year-old Sam Steele. Your thoughts on the Pats?
Oh, yeah, he's a machine. And I think coming into the league, everyone's really excited about the prospects of Sam Steele. Him and Cale Clegg were the two guys you heard coming out of that Bantam draft. And so Steele, almost a point per game, which is a really, really tough thing to do as a 16-year-old. Nick Merkley might be a pretty good example of that going back to last year with the Kelowna Rockets. But an excellent player. Morgan Klimchuk is really the guy to me that just keeps everything all together. I mean, he's a wonderful, wonderful player that never really gets the credit. But you look at this Regina team, we shouldn't really be that surprised. I mean, they won the division last year. Yep. And then with the ownership change, Malcolm Cameron leaves. I think as soon as people see a coaching change, they think inherently that there's problems. And I don't think there was. I think it was just a management decision, you know, with bringing John Paddock in there to be the head coach. It wasn't, I don't think, anything necessarily that Malcolm Cameron did wrong. But you can't argue with the move that's been made. They're hot right now in the WHL.
They are the other honorable mention there is that Blainville, Boisbriand, the Armada. Sam, this was supposed to be a significant rebuilding year. I can't figure it out. This one's a freak to me.
How and why? Is a freak. I don't know. Yeah, but I think we've mentioned it on here before. But remind me, a lot of the Medicine Hat Tigers, in that you're going to find a lot of good junior players on both teams, not necessarily high end pro prospects, and so they just kind of they work hard every night. They win games. They've had good goaltending, you know, and a couple of, you know, Walcott's a heck of a player. But, you know, they still have a couple of decent pieces. But, no, I wouldn't say any rock stars. So they're just kind of doing it by committee right now, the same way that the Medicine Hat Tigers are doing it.
All right, Sammy, as we wrap up, we look forward to Friday and Friday Night Hockey. You and RJ and Falzi have the call at the rink in Kitchener. It is the Sarnia Sting and the Kitchener Rangers. A couple of names, a couple of players you have your eyes on. We already talked to Troy Smith about his squad. But when you look at the Sarnia Sting, draft-eligible Pavel Zacha is one of those names that's out there. Anthony D'Angelo, first-round draft pick in the draft last year, leads all OHL defensemen in scoring. Who jumps out for you from the Sting or from the Rangers, for that matter?
Yeah, those two guys for sure. And the guy that I'm really interested in seeing is Korestilev, too. He started to really make his name and started to enter the conversation as a guy who's a potential first-round pick. So number 35 with Sarnia, Nikita Kerestilev, is a guy that we'd heard a lot about. But other than that, it's a fairly pedestrian group. Hayden Hodgson is a guy I've always loved, even going back to his days in Erie. And I don't think Jacob Chychrun is ready yet. I wish he was, and I'm not. I'll have to get.
I don't think he's going to be there.
I don't think so. Yeah. But he's a guy that I'm dying to watch him play. So yeah, from the Kitchener side, you know, the typical cast of characters there. When you look at Bailey and McGinnis, and you know, I'm interested to see how the goaltending is going to respond too. It's a couple of guys there that are trying to prove themselves in Greenfield and Carty. We talked to. You know, Troy Smith a little bit about that, and you'll hear that a little later on in the podcast. But, those are a couple of guys I'm looking forward to seeing for sure.
You know, Kerestilev is an interesting story. We don't see this happen very often, but he comes to Canada at the age of 14 to play with the Vaughan Kings and then the Junior Canadians of the GTHL. Dave DeMisa, who's fluent in Russian, helps to bring him over and acclimatize him. Do you think we start to see more of that? Players coming in before their junior eligibility come in and play in the GTHL?
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll see a little bit of that. I think, you know, depending on how good the players, I mean, Igor Larionov has got that pipeline to Sarnia.
Oh, boy, does he. Yep.
You know, he would be the guy that I would expect to you know, maybe to facilitate this a little more than anybody else. I think it's a great idea if, you know, if you're like an Ivan Barbashev and you've made up your mind to come to North America and play, why not do it, you know, a year or two earlier than what you do instead of just jumping right in as a 16 or maybe 17-year-old into the Canadian Hockey League? Come on over and play some minor midget and kind of see what things are all about. Learn the language a little bit in what is going to be a less pressure situation where you're not in the spotlight.
Amen to that. Hey, listen, Sam, long podcast today. Great job as always.
Just
yes,
quickly.
Sammy. Yeah, bud.
The BMO Top Prospects game coming up on the 22nd of January in Niagara. The assistant coaches have been announced. So Kiprios McLean will be involved. Don Cherry and Bobby Orr will be involved. And then the coaching staff from Niagara with Marty Williamson, Dave Bell, and Billy Burke will be involved there. And Brian Kilray being involved with Bert O'Brien. So it's pretty cool to have that group of guys back together again. And even if we have to put up with Kipper and McLean, we'll do it.
And a nice shiny new rink to go to, Sam.
Yeah, awesome barn. Beautiful. The Meridian Center in Niagara, they've done a really good job. Connected by two pathways right into the downtown area, which has started to revitalize there. I expect it to be rocking and rolling on the 22nd of January.
Should be a lot of fun. Hey, listen, thanks so much for joining us today on Junior. We're back next Wednesday for another podcast right here at Sportsnet.ca or iTunes. In the meantime, you can check me and Sammy out on Friday. Sammy working with RJ Broadhead and Rob Falds in Kitchener. It is the Rangers facing off against the Sting. I'll be doing studio with Damian Cox and Todd Warner. On behalf of Sam Cosentino, I'm Jeff Merrick signing off. Oh, and Matt Brown, by the way, playing keyboards in the background, our producer. Thanks so much for joining us this week on the podcast. Back next Wednesday for more Junior.